Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Virginia will inbound with Ty Jerome. Jerome to trigger on the near sideline. They're in the left-hand offensive zone. Down by two, 62-60. Jerome slaps the basketball, looking, peering, finds Guy in the left corner for three, and the win! Off the rim, no good! And the Tigers claw back, but wait! Was there a foul? Was there a foul in the corner? The clock is at zeros, but Auburn fouled the shooter. Bruce Pearl is at half court. He can't believe it.
These are moments that, you know, every basketball player has dreamed of, you know, hitting a game-winning shot or free throws or whatever. You know, I kind of had that feeling in your stomach, like a good nervousness, like, all right, this is my chance. And, you know, to be able to go to the national championship off of that for these guys and Coach Bennett, I mean, I really don't have the words.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This is after Kyle Guy had calmed down. He told Tracy Wolfson on the court he was terrified. I'd like to tell you that I wasn't nervous at all, he said, but I was terrified stepping up to the line to hit three free throws and give UVA the improbable victory over Auburn in the first national semi and move the Cavaliers into the national championship game against Texas Tech. Kevin Kugler with the calls on Westwood One and then Kyle Guy in his post-game press conference. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for using our social media. We'll get to all of your comments about the weekend in sports, but right now we're pleased to welcome from Minneapolis Mike DeCourcy, who's covering it for the Sporting News and is there year after year. And Mike, I always appreciate the perspective from guys who've covered this event for a long time. I've only been to one Final Four. It happened to be in a massive football stadium in Houston. How do you like the stadiums being host sites for basketball tournaments? Is it really did take some getting used to for me.
You know, Amy, I very fortunately had the experience before I started to cover Final Fours, and I've been covering long enough that when I went to my first couple, they were in basketball arenas, McNichols Arena back in the old days in Denver, and Kemper Arena as well, no longer really there in Kansas City as well. But the first one I went to was as a fan. A friend of mine got tickets in 1987, and we were probably about 20 rows from the top of the Superdome. And this was before the big screens. They had screens, but it was like watching a game of, you know, Tecmo Bowl or something. You really couldn't see anything, so you really had to train yourself to watch the game. But it was an experience that I wouldn't trade for anything. I had such a great time with my friends, and I wouldn't want that to be taken away from some other 25-year-old or 27-year-old or whatever, or even, you know, a 50-year-old. But that's what I was when I had that. I wouldn't take that away from those people that want to do that. And if you put it in a basketball arena in today's age, what happens is if you happen to be one of the few people that would win the ticket lottery, right away, basically, you'd have about a $5,000, $10,000 ticket in your pocket, and you wouldn't keep it because it's $5,000 or $10,000. So all you're really doing is basically making it a game for rich people. And I just don't see how that is a positive over, you know, some young guy or young group of girls or whatever, or you know, even some, you know, group of, you know, a girl's trip to Minneapolis for the Final Four, or a buddy's trip, instead of a golf trip. I mean, I just think that's a better way to have the Final Four, where it can be a communal experience that everyone could participate in.
Yeah, it definitely is different in those major stadiums. Mike DeCourcy is in Minneapolis for the Final Four, covering it with the Sporting News and the Big Ten Network, and now joining us after hours on CBS Sports Radio. So my niece, my older niece, is a student at UVA and has been to a lot of basketball games. And, of course, they're all excited. There are watch parties all over campus. She said last night when the game got over, she walked outside and the place was just buzzing because she's not that far from the little corner there on campus. And so I know her experience. She said they were freaking out. What happened inside the arena when we had that crazy roller coaster last couple minutes between Auburn and Virginia?
Well, a lot of what happened was booing. There's no question that the Auburn fans were upset by what happened. And I think that, based on one or two of the angles, that maybe even some of the non-attached fans were bothered by the call. I looked at it several times. I got in contact with a friend who is a Division I referee at the level where he worked in this tournament, and he told me immediately. I mean, he texted me right back, and he said that's a foul every time. He said that that if you are a jump shooter, there is no such thing as incidental contact because of the fact that you are away from the goal. It's understood that that contact on a shooter away from the goal is much more affecting than that's closer up. The farther away you move, the more contact affects you. So he said that it was a very gutsy call to make, and he thought that the official who did that did the absolute right thing. I concur. I did not have a problem with that. There's been some discussion about the absence of a double dribble call against Ty Jerome as he advanced the ball on that possession, and it's correct he did double dribble. However, they also missed a personal foul in advance of the double dribble that Auburn was actually trying to commit, and they did. They didn't call it. So that sort of canceled each other out. I think that as a result of all that mess, the correct team won, the team that earned it. I know that Auburn feels aggrieved. It was a tough way to lose a game. But they played five games in this tournament, and they fouled a three-point shooter at the buzzer in two of them.
Yes,
so
that's right.
It's not an isolated incident.
Seriously, I was remembering the New Mexico State game where they had lost that lead, and then you think they learned from that particular situation. So, Mike, the Texas Tech defense is obviously extremely well-known, is pretty much like left a path in its wake of destruction. What makes it dangerous now as they go up against Virginia?
Well, the first thing that makes it dangerous is that they are elite at both taking the ball from you and blocking your shot. And there aren't a lot of defenses that can do both of those. Being able to block a team's shot makes it easier to be able to gamble in the ways that could create steals. But they don't have to gamble. That's why they're so good. They can take it from you without gambling. They don't have to jump passing lanes and leave themselves exposed because in order to get the ball from you. And that's what really makes them special. They stay connected, they stay intact, and they still are disruptive, and then they are at the rim really difficult to go against. It's when you look at Tariq Owens' shot block numbers, they almost seem low relative to the influence he has on a game. He is really affecting at the rim. You could see it on Xavier Tillman is a terrific inside player and had his way down the stretch in the Big Ten, but he was really bothered, unquestionably, by Tariq Owens. Nick Ward did a good job battling, but wasn't as effective as he might have been in getting position. They weren't great at getting the ball to him, again, because of the difficulty that the pressure on the passer Texas Tech creates. And then you saw when Owens went out for a little while because he got hurt in a collision, I believe with a teammate, that's when Michigan State made their run. And so his presence is very important to tomorrow night. Now, he was not in the locker room today during the open media locker room period. Chris Beard was asked if he had an update on Tariq's situation, and he flat answered no. When he wasn't made available, we asked if he were getting treatment. They wouldn't answer. So I don't know what his situation is relative to tomorrow night. He did seem fine toward the end of yesterday's game. He did return, and he seemed fine. But I don't know whether they were doing that for effect or whether there was a significant problem there.
Mike DeCourcy with us from Minneapolis, covering the Final Four for the Sporting News and Big Ten Network. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. So it's got it's a pair of teams that have never been in the championship game, so a pair of schools, sorry, and also a pair of coaches who've not been to this point before. What does that say to you about the landscape of the sport?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, these are two excellent coaches, and whether they break through together on their own or separately in separate years or whatever, I think that's coincidental more than anything. I think more that it's the nature of what they are as coaches, defense first. That's the interesting thing. We had in the first 6 years of this decade, we had four teams out of 36 in those six years of Final Fours. We had four teams that hit 75 points in Final Four games. We were really on a downward scoring trend. And in the past 3 years, with J.D. Collins, Jim Delaney, some other people involved in trying to bring the offense back, we had 8 out of 18 teams hit 75 points or more in Final Four games. Yesterday, we didn't have any. I mean, so it was really interesting that these two defenses were effective enough to break that trend. They're not just stopping the opposing team. They're stopping progress in a lot of ways with how good they are defensively.
And Michigan State, obviously, with the lows in points and field goal percentage for the entire season. So they were definitely frustrated. All right, so before I let you go then, Mike, how do you think the Red Raiders D matches up with Virginia?
Yeah, I think what scares me relative to Virginia is I don't know how they handle Texas Tech's physicality defensively. Virginia is not they're a team that looks like that the weight room. And this may not be true. I mean, they may all be super strong, but they don't look like it. They look like a team that the weight room door is always locked. And so I wonder about how that holds up against the physicality of the way that Texas Tech plays. Michigan State, which is one of the toughest teams, one of the physically toughest teams
right. That
you could ask to see, they couldn't cope with that. And they weren't able to get to their spots. They weren't able to run clean offense. When they finally got some open shots, Matt McQuaid wide open, I think 150-ish left. He makes that shot. It's a tie game. He shot the ball like he was trying to shoot it literally through three guys. Like he had to the ball had to pass through three bodies to get to the rim. That's why he shot it so hard and long. And I think that that's something that I'll be very interesting to see whether or not Virginia's physicality, whether it can deal with what Texas Tech presents. I suspect not, which is why I picked Texas Tech to win tomorrow night and get their first NCAA championship.
Amazing. Not that they were a really low seed or a Cinderella, but just the story and the fact that it's a first time, it would be a great way to cap the college basketball season. You can find Mike on Twitter at TSN Mike. He's covering the college hoops landscape as well as the Final Four in Minneapolis for the Sporting News. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes. Great to have you on.
Always a pleasure, Amy. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.